breakout. One day in early 1975, Al Alcorn was sitting in his office at Atari when Ron Wayne burst in. "Hey, Stevie is back," he shouted. "Wow, bring him on in," Alcorn replied. Jobs shuffled in, barefoot, wearing a saffron robe, and carrying a copy of Be Here Now, which he handed to Alcorn and insisted he read. "Can I have my job back?" he asked. He looked like a Hare Krishna guy, but it was great to see him, Alcorn recalled. "So I said, sure." Once again, for the sake of harmony, Jobs worked mostly at night. Wozniak, who was living in an apartment nearby and working at HP, would come by after dinner to hang out and play the video games. He had become addicted to Pong at a Sunnyvale bowling alley, and he was able to build a version that he hooked up to his home TV set. One day in the late summer of 1975, Nolan Bushnell, defying the prevailing wisdom that paddle games were over, decided to develop a single-player version of Pong. Instead of competing against an opponent, the player would volley the ball into a wall that lost a brick whenever it was hit. He called Jobs into his office, sketched it out on his little blackboard, and asked him to design it. There would be a bonus, Bushnell told him, for every chip fewer than 50 that he used. Bushnell knew that Jobs was not a great engineer, but he assumed correctly that he would recruit Wozniak, who was always hanging around. "I looked at it as a two-for-one thing," Bushnell recalled. "Woz was a better engineer." Wozniak was thrilled when Jobs asked him to help and proposed splitting the fee. "This was the most wonderful offer in my life, to actually design a game that people would use," he recalled. Jobs said it had to be done in 4 days and with the fewest chips possible. What he hid from Wozniak was that the deadline was one that Jobs had imposed because he needed to get to the All-One farm to help prepare for the apple harvest. He also didn't mention that there was a bonus tied to keeping down the number of chips. "A game like this might take most engineers a few months," Wozniak recalled. "I thought there was no way I could do it, but Steve made me sure that I could. So he stayed up 4 nights in a row and did it." During the day at HP, Wozniak would sketch out his design on paper. Then, after a fast food meal, he would go right to Atari and stay all night. As Wozniak churned out the design, Jobs sat on a bench to his left implementing it by wire-wrapping the chips onto a breadboard. "While Steve was breadboarding, I spent time playing my favorite game ever, which was the auto racing game Grand Track 10," Wozniak said. Astonishingly, they were able to get the job done in 4 days, and Wozniak used only 45 chips. Recollections differ, but by most accounts, Jobs simply gave Wozniak half of the base fee and not the bonus Bushnell paid for saving 5 chips. It would be another 10 years before Wozniak discovered, by being shown the tale in a book on the history of Atari titled Zap, that Jobs had been paid this bonus. "I think that Steve needed the money, and he just didn't tell me the truth," Wozniak later said. When he talks about it now, there are long pauses, and he admits that it causes him pain. "I wish he had just been honest. If he had told me he needed the money, he should have known I would have just given it to him. He was a friend. You help your friends." To Wozniak, it showed a fundamental difference in their characters. "Ethics always mattered to me, and I still don't understand why he would have gotten paid one thing and told me he'd gotten paid another," he said. "But, you know, people are different." When Jobs learned this story was published, he called Wozniak to deny it. "He told me that he didn't remember doing it, and that if he did something like that, he would remember it, so he probably didn't do it," Wozniak recalled. When I asked Jobs directly, he became unusually quiet and hesitant. "I don't know where that allegation comes from," he said. "I gave him half the money I ever got. That's how I've always been with Woz. I mean, Woz stopped working in 1978. He never did 1 ounce of work after 1978. And yet he got exactly the same shares of Apple stock that I did." Is it possible that memories are muddled and that Jobs did not, in fact, shortchange Wozniak? There's a chance that my memory is all wrong and messed up, Wozniak told me, but after a pause he reconsidered. But no, I remember the details of this one, the $350 check. He confirmed his memory with Nolan Bushnell and Al Alcorn. I remember talking about the bonus money to Woz, and he was upset, Bushnell said. I said, yes, there was a bonus for each chip they saved, and he just shook his head and then clucked his tongue. Whatever the truth, Wozniak later insisted that it was not worth rehashing. Jobs is a complex person, he said, and being manipulative is just the darker facet of the traits that make him successful. Wozniak would never have been that way, but as he points out, he also could never have built Apple. I would rather let it pass, he said when I pressed the point. It's not something I want to judge Steve by. The Atari experience helped shape Jobs' approach to business and design. He appreciated the user-friendliness of Atari's insert quarter, avoid Klingons games. That simplicity rubbed off on him and made him a very focused product person, said Ron Wayne. Jobs also absorbed some of Bushnell's take-no-prisoners attitude. Nolan wouldn't take no for an answer, according to Alcorn, and this was Steve's first impression of how things got done. Nolan was never abusive, like Steve sometimes is, but he had the same driven attitude. It made me cringe, but damn it, it got things done. In that way, Nolan was a mentor for Jobs. Bushnell agreed. There is something indefinable in an entrepreneur, and I saw that in Steve, he said. He was interested not just in engineering, but also the business aspects. I taught him that if you act like you can do something, then it will work. I told him, pretend to be completely in control, and people will assume that you are.